I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The U.S. Supreme Court will rule this term whether a transgender boy may use the boys' bathroom in a Virginia high school. Its consideration of the issue reflects the growing debate in this country about the rights of people who express a gender identity different than they were assigned at birth, and whether those rights can impose an undue burden on others. To form a better understanding of what transgender means today, Dr. Wes Crenshaw joins us and will speak with a middle schooler who's considering his gender identity. We'll discuss how the concept of gender is changing in America, particularly among teens and young adults. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. How does it feel to be told that you can't use a restroom because of how others perceive you? In this country, it used to be that it was your color that determined which facility you could use. These days, gender identity is the dividing line. If you identify as one gender, but it doesn't meld with the sex marked on your birth certificate, then things like which restroom you can use ends up in the U.S. Supreme Court. This hour, we'll look at what gender and transgender means and how that discussion has changed in recent years. Wes Crenshaw is back with us again. He's a Lawrence psychologist and an author, as well as a certified sex therapist. He's working on a book titled Consent-Based Sex Education, Guiding Teens in an Internet Age. And Wes, welcome back.
Hi there, and welcome back to you as a loyal listener. It's a happy day for a lot of reasons.
Well, I appreciate that, and you've been working on this book for a while. You about ready to wrap it up?
Since the late 60s. and
something like that, right?
To be honest, it is taking so long because we are on the 500th page. No, really?
500 pages?
Yeah, so you think I'm kidding. That is illustrative of what we've gotten ourselves into in terms of how complicated a lot of the parenting issues are around sexuality.
We're going to talk about that right now. Wes is joined by Alan. He's a Metro transgender middle school student who was assigned female at birth but identifies as male and uses male pronouns. And Alan, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Thank you.
We've talked on this show before about this, Wes, but for some listeners, a word of caution here. There's a whole new world out there when it comes to the way teens identify their sexuality. Can you give us a sense of that range, Wes? Because it sort of runs a while.
Yeah, and I think it's important right off the bat to divide up gender identity and sexual identity, or what I'm now calling sexual attraction.
Keep this simple, because it gets complicated.
Whoa, that's going to be hard.
Yeah.
I think one of the really good reference point is there was a Moth Radio Hour back in September. Sybil Abbott did the story, and she talked about coming to terms with her daughter's transition to male. And she said, I realized the difference was when my child came out as gay, that was about who my child would love and build a life with. And coming out as transgender was about who my child was in the world. And she says that was really scary. Hmm. And so the difference there is with sexual orientation or sexual attraction, that's who catches your eye, who you want to be in a relationship with. And that can vary now, of course, has varied for a long time, and we recognize it now more, between both genders, strongly one gender or strongly another gender. And all of that.
And there's
a
range in the middle that is really, again, for just not to stereotype here, but for older listeners, it's kind of a hard thing to get arms around sometimes.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is this idea of sexual attraction, gay, straight, bisexual, goes all the way back to the 50s and the Kinsey scale. Mm-hmm. And that was the first recollection or first understanding that people might be on a scale from very straight, very primarily same opposite sex attracted, to very same sex attracted and anywhere in between. And anybody who's a fan of the TV show Masters of Sex, mm-hmm. About Masters and Johnson, this played a huge role in the last season. The idea of the scale.
Yeah. Okay. So the scale's out there. lots of different possibilities. That's the important thing to know here.
To understanding sexual attraction. And then on the other hand, we have gender identity, which, as Sybil Abbott said so well, is who the person is how they experience themselves on a spectrum of very male to very female. And we now have something that is increasingly common, which is non-binary. And everybody's jaw drops at this point.
That means what, Wes?
This means identifying neither strongly as male or as female.
Yeah. And again, a lot of listeners are going to be perplexed by this. A lot of folks think this is pretty straightforward stuff, and you're suggesting something very much to the contrary here.
Yeah. So the evolution of thinking on this is even more complex than just trying to explain it, because historically, and to a large degree to this day, people who do this research and are in this field are very binary. They see if you were born with the gender assigned male, then you might, in your brain and in your thinking patterns and in your self-assessment, see yourself as female, and that you then go through a transition process where you become more female, which can include how you hold yourself out in public, what clothes you wear, and ultimately hormone and surgery.
Yeah.
This is changing even within that group of people who do this work. The young people are coming to this with a much different view of how that is, that it's not this very clear linear process of I am this identity and I need to sort of go on a journey to get there. It's a little more nuanced than that.
Well, Alan, let me bring you into our conversation. When did you first begin to think about yourself as a male?
Well, in grade school, people would call me a boy because they just thought I was, and I started to like that, and it's kind of just what I liked.
And why did you like it?
It just felt more right, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it felt like that was who I am and that was who I like to be.
Was that confusing for you? Was it difficult to navigate or not really?
It was kind of difficult to understand that, I was something different than what everyone else called me sometimes. But in the end, it was like, this is who I am and I'm okay with that.
I'm wondering how your friends, how your teachers sort of reacted and responded to how you felt and what you wanted to be.
Well, a lot of them were not happy.
Not happy about what?
About me calling myself a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't think I was, and they were saying I couldn't do things that they could. The boys mainly.
Sports, I gather,
yeah.
You might be referring to there.
And then the boys did not want me to try to do boy things, air quotes, but the girls were a lot more okay with it, I guess. And then the boys were either really not okay with it or really like, good job, you can do things.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard at night as you were by yourself sort of beginning to think about all this? Was it hard to go to school? Was it difficult to see yourself as who you were?
A little bit, because there was like harassment at school sometimes.
Sure.
And that wasn't really okay, and that made me feel terrible. But other than that, it was pretty okay, and I was okay with going to school.
I'm wondering, did you ever come across other kids who might say to you even quietly, you know, Alan, maybe I'm not so different than you are?
I've had a few other trans kids as friends, and they were kind of like that, and I've helped people through that. So I kind of understand other people saying, hey, I'm kind of the same.
Yeah. You know, Wes, I'm wondering from your vantage point, you know, is it easier for kids these days who are coming out as different than their gender identity at birth? Is that process smoothing out for kids? Are kids at large more accepting?
Yeah, it's a great question. So to the extent that anything is easy in middle school,
middle school.
Exactly.
What's easy in middle school?
And we're seeing, I say this and I hope people don't take it wrong. I used to not be very interested in seeing middle school kids. I just didn't think they were that interesting. You know, they just, and they're just fascinating now. Like, I see a bunch of them, and they come in with I did an interview with Alan the other day to get his perspective on this, and I found him the same way. They come in with this very, you know, rich understanding of sexuality and gender identity. They have a whole language that a lot of them have had to teach me this language, all in seventh and eighth grade. And then that continues on in high school, but they're really getting a very early experience of this. And in my experience, there are a lot of people who are in the category Alan describes of sort of being welcoming of gender, different expressions of gender. And of course, there are still people who are not accepting, but it has moved a lot in the last 4 or 5 years, more than I would have ever imagined.
You know, we're sitting here talking about middle school, and that's, as you've suggested, such a treacherous time in any kid's life, male, female, whatever you are. I'm wondering, at that point in your life, how sure can you be of what you are when it comes to your own gender identity?
Well, that is an interesting... Alan and I had this discussion the other day, and I'm interested in his response.
Yeah, I'd be interested too.
So on my angle, I'll say my thought and then turn to you, Alan. My view is that I am surprised at the certitude of middle school kids when they come in and tell me this. What I have done...
Certitude is one thing, but is that in fact what they are?
Yeah, there is the eye of the beholder. So what I have said to a lot of kids, and we are at a peace about this because I see quite a few of these kids, is to say everyone is evolving at this point. And I advise parents to go the same route. Or I'll give you an example. I had the best answer I ever got was a kid who came out to their grandparent. And this was, they were very afraid that the grandparent would struggle with this for obvious reasons. This is a fairly young grandparent by comparison. Mm-hmm. And the grandparent said something I think we all should think about and understand. They said, you know, when I was your age, I questioned a lot of things. I think it's really good to ask questions. Mm. And I think that's a good answer because to me, one is not done with their sexual and gender evolution when they're 12 or 13, but one is on that journey. And in society, we don't want to think about that at 12 and 13 and 14.
Yeah.
But likewise, I think none of us are finished until we pass through adolescence into adulthood. So letting that evolve and being supportive of it is the position I think as a therapist I take and one I advise parents to take. Where will people come out? Get back to me in 10 years and we'll see.
Alan, what about this question of how certain you can be about your gender identity at this point in your life? You know, again, everyone thinks about middle school and everyone thinks about tumult and uncertainty and all kinds of things. What about it?
I think you can be almost completely certain, but at the same time, you should keep your mind open to change in yourself and in others. And if you are completely sure, just make sure you're okay with that changing. Don't be like, I can't change. This is who I am right now.
Mm-hmm. So, Wes, what Alan's saying is that kids evolve here.
Yeah,
I think there's an evolution going on in terms of their sexual identity that, again, is going to catch some listeners cold here. That's a surprise to them.
And that has always been true. Long ago, in the 90s, I said the whole point of adolescence for teenage girls is organizing their sexuality. And I didn't really mean it like to determine if they're gay or straight. It was to just think of who they are as a sexual person. And I think that's more true now than it's ever been, and it's a little more complex process than we've seen in the past.
Yeah. Let me get our listeners involved here. Again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about gender and transgender and what all that means, evolving roles, sexual identity among kids these days, a very different kind of environment than what many of us saw when we were kids. We're interested in your thoughts, your comments. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. When are you noticing, Wes, that kids are beginning to notice that they're identifying with a certain gender that wasn't assigned to them at birth. What's your own practice telling you as you go about your daily business?
Well, my practice is larger now because I have a number of more associates I've brought in, so they see younger kids, and so I now have a broader range of experience. Prior to that, I wouldn't have known much about grade school kids, but we certainly have had more than one occasion where a grade school child, and this is surprising to me, a fifth grader, will be identifying or wanting to identify as a gender not assigned at birth. Now, to be clear, that's surprising to Wes. When you look at the literature, that's absolutely present in the literature, even younger kids than that. So that is what I'm seeing is middle school kids, but that's because I start seeing kids at middle school.
Right. Ellen, do you feel like you chose the male gender or did it choose you, if you follow me?
I feel like it kind of chose me. It's kind of like liking bananas. You can't control.
I'm sorry, like liking what?
Bananas.
Okay.
You can't really control it. You either like bananas or you don't. And you can eat bananas even if you don't like them because you know they're healthy. But that doesn't mean you like them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Alan used that metaphor with me the other day in the interview, and I'm going to steal it and use it again, especially bananas because they're kind of evocative. and I don't know whether I really like bananas, but I do eat them because they're healthy.
Right.
But there are people who love bananas, and that is clearly their attraction and what they identify with. And I think it's just an interesting metaphor. It fits.
Yeah, I'm wondering about the level of confusion, Wes, among young people. Given all these new dynamics here, these new possibilities, these new options that kids can now confront, I'm just struggling with the notion that at 12, 13, 14, a young person's ability to sort of confront this and embrace it and make good decisions.
Well, I'll give you an example, and I think it's kind of I don't know. It's an amusing example, but I don't think it. I'm not trying to make fun of anybody when I say it. So very often I will get middle school kids come in and say, I identify this way or that way, and I'm asexual. And asexuality is a whole new concept.
Asexual meaning what exactly?
I do not have sexual attraction. I do not wish to be a sexual being.
Even though I identify as one way or
exactly.
Another.
Exactly. Because, see, there you got it right there. To be, to have gender identity is not to express a specific sexual attraction. If one identifies as a female, if they are male at birth and identify as female and are attracted to women, then they are same-sex attracted.
Okay.
So on top of all that, to make it more complicated, we have middle school kids saying they are asexual. And so, in one sense,
is that just a word that gets tossed around?
No,
does it have some validity and meaning attached to it?
They are, again, the most educated people you'll ever meet. There is a whole language. I actually cannot do the language successfully. Alan might be able to. But it goes through this whole thing of sexual attraction and romantic attraction, and those are separated in the language. And so you are. You can be sort of sexually neutral, not interested. Well, my point to middle school kids is, okay, let's leave that alone for a while because you are 12 and 13 and 14. Many people, I have a very straight girl the other day in ninth grade who I said, so are you interested in dating? She says, ooh, no, boys have cooties. And she laughed. But she is saying a different version of I'm not at that stage yet in my life. Now, the problem is if I say to a middle school student who comes in and says,
and that may be fair. That might, at that age, you may be,
right.
I guess, if you want to put a word to it, asexual.
Right. And how one discriminates between someone who's really saying, I express a desire not to be sexual, versus someone who's not developmentally there yet, versus someone who's just anxious, is part of why this has gotten to be such an interesting business these days to be doing psychology with teens and sex therapy.
Again, I think our listeners are getting a sense of the range of possibilities.
Yeah.
Hey, how many of your buddies, Alan, would describe themselves as asexual?
I have quite a few. I have like three friends who are asexual or describe themselves as asexual. And they all believe that they just aren't sexually attracted to people and they're just not interested in it. But most people think in asexuality, there are the sex repulsed, the sexual neutral, and the people who would want to have sex, but they just aren't attracted to people.
I told you that Alan would have a better language than I about that. That's very well put.
Very well put. 816-235-2888 is the number here. We're talking about sexual identity among the younger groups. And let's go to Kaya from Olathe. Kaya, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Welcome. Welcome to Up to Date. Nice to have you.
Hi. Nice to have you back. So I'm actually really excited. Before I even called, I was going to mention that I also identify as asexual. And then, like, as I'm waiting, you guys start bringing it up. So it's cool. I also identify as gender non-binary. So, and I think this show is just like, super amazing just to talk about these issues that, like, we face within this community. And I'm also the former president of the Gender and Sexuality Alliance over at Johnson County Community College. So I've gotten a lot of experience talking to kids and young adults and even older adults who identify in various ways along the LGBT spectrum. And I was just really curious if you guys could touch more on, like, non-binary gender, especially for, like, young adults and, like, older teens. I didn't come out until I was, like, 20, and I'm only 23 now, so, I mean, it wasn't even that long ago.
Right.
But it's one of those things where it's, like, I didn't even know until I was around people who would explain it to me. I just always thought that I was weird and that I was broken, and someone's like, no, that there's a word for that. And
that's
that
interesting.
Itself was just, yeah, just having a word for it kind of just made me so comfortable and made it so much easier to, like, come out. And I was just wondering, with you and Wes and Alan, everybody who's had, like, any experience with people who identify outside of the gender binary.
And I need a definition here. And Kai, I want you to hang on the line if you would. Wes, help me with a definition of non-binary gender so everyone's on the same page here.
Okay. I'm going to, first of all, defer to Alan to do that because you do it better than I do.
In my opinion, non-binary is not identifying as specifically female or male. You're kind of just not either, but at the same time, you're not agender. You're just kind of yourself, and it's your own experience of gender.
And Kaya, do you identify as they?
I like it, but I'm not really that picky. I'm comfortable enough. I present as mostly female. I presented as female my entire life, assigned female at birth, etc. So, and that was one of the weird things too. When I came out, I was just like, well, I don't really identify as female, but I look female, and I'm not offended by it.
And how old are you, Kaya? Do you mind telling me?
Yeah, I'm 23.
Okay, so you're right. You're right in the young adult range of this group, because it actually matters almost by year now how people think about this. If you go back to the middle school kids versus the young adults, just in terms of how that culture has evolved, many times the younger people are more preferring of the gender neutral term they. So to explain how you would use this in a sentence, I would speak to Alan's mom, let's say, and I would say, so how are they doing today? And Alan's mom would say, well, they're really feeling good. They are enjoying school and having a good time. But we would be speaking about Alan, and so it's a plural term talking about a single person. And making that adaptation for gender non-binary people can be hard for parents and teachers and so on. But Kaya is very forgiving. Some people really want that pronoun.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in my club, and then some people that I just know outside of school and et cetera, who are very particular about the gender neutral pronoun. And then even things like, I have a friend who's very offended by the word dude, because they are very uncomfortable in the fact that they look very masculine and they identify as agender. And so it's just such an interesting, like, you kind of have to talk to that person and find what they're comfortable with. And then, but yeah, like, I feel like I'm the only person who's just like, yeah, whatever.
Kaya, I wonder if you can just describe for us, when you say you're non-binary gender, that means you don't identify, you said, as specifically female or male. Tell me about that. Is that confusing? Is that hard to be in that place? Is it not?
It's ups and downs, definitely. There are just some things where I'm just, it's almost how I feel about other people as well, as not just myself. I feel like, you know, people who identify as male should be allowed to wear makeup. And I think that people who identify as female should be allowed to look more masculine or not shave or whatever. And for me, it's just kind of my expression of I don't necessarily adhere to the societal gender roles. While I do still mostly present as female, it's just kind of what I'm comfortable with. And I feel like I have more clothing options and I'm kind of a fashionista. So that's something for me specifically. But overall, I just don't feel emotionally or mentally, I don't necessarily feel like a woman. Mm-hmm. So, and when somebody explained it to me as somebody was like, well, you know, maybe gender just isn't for you. And I'm like, oh, cool. Yeah, that makes it so much easier.
Hey, can I ask, how have you been accepted at Johnson County Community College? How has that worked for you?
Oh, wonderful.
Great.
Everyone there is so accepting. The club, like I said, I'm the former president. I'm not the president currently. But everybody is just amazingly accepting there. If you just tell them, hey, like, these are my pronouns, super cool about it. There are a couple of teachers who are, like, they will email the classes and say, hey, if you go by a different name or by different pronouns, tell me now so I don't, you know, accidentally misgender you or call you by your birth name in class. And they're so polite and they're so accepting.
Oh, that's
and
great.
I'm very proud of the school.
Kai, I just want you to know how appreciative I am that you called in, and I really appreciate you taking the time because I think it helped us understand some things, and all the best to you.
Thank you so much for doing the show, and it's so good to have you back. Thank
Great.
You.
Great. I appreciate that, Kaya. Thanks very much. I need to take a break. I'm like way over because this conversation got me going, and I was so interested in it. So let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation about what gender and transgender means, the changing roles, sexual roles, sexual identity, changing views in our society. 816-235-2888 is the number. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. On Friday's program, we learned about the inner workings of the human body and about the young women of Kansas City whose writing pushed for recognition years before suffrage. You can listen to those conversations at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, the two words that can fix nearly anything. And no, it's not duct tape. It's I'm sorry. We learn how to craft a meaningful apology and how to avoid making a bad situation even worse. Well, this hour, we're talking about gender, transgender, changing identities in society. Wes Crenshaw is here, a Lawrence psychologist working on a book called Consent-Based Sex Education. He's joined by Alan, who's a transgender middle school student who was assigned female at birth but identifies as male and uses male pronouns. I wanted to get to a couple points, Wes, that Kaya brought up before she left us here. This notion that some young people these days feel that the idea of gender has been overdone in society. Explain what that's about.
Well, I think this is the backlash against a history throughout our lives and well before that, where gender was everything. You know, I always like to reference TV shows. The people who watch Mad Men or any show that's set in the late 50s, early 60s, see how poorly women were treated. And we all know this from history, but experiencing it, re-experiencing it is worthwhile. And they were simply treated that way because they're women. Well, this is the farthest extension away from that, where to say you are a male and this is how males are is sort of what's generated this backlash.
She also mentioned the whole idea of clubs, social support at Johnson County Community College for kids who identify this way. How important is that?
Very important, and it's very common now. In high schools, recently those have been called GSA, Gay Straight Alliance, but as we have broadened that and been inclusive, usually within the same group of transgender folks, those are usually named something else. But many schools have these now, and they're quite popular.
And important. important, it sounds like.
Very important for, as is online life. Online life, properly managed, has become very important for people to reach out and get to know.
816-235-2888 is the phone number here. Some folks been waiting very patiently. Let's go to them now. Don from Kansas City, Missouri. Don, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Just last week, as a matter of fact, my 12-year-old daughter came to me and said that she wanted to bind her breasts because she was gender fluid. And there had just never been any indication in her life that she was anything other than a girl. I mean, you look at her room, it's a girl's room. You know, the things she enjoys are girl things. And, of course, I was supportive and said, well, honey, whoever you are is who you are, and we will love you, and we will support you in whatever you want to do or however you feel you are. And she said, well, I want to be referred to as they. But the phrase gender fluid was a new one for me. And I was wondering if, given her age and a couple other things, like another one of her friends a week before said that she was bisexual, and then another two girls said they're a couple, is this just playing out, acting out, wanting some drama in their life? Is, you know, is that a possibility here? What I plan to do, and her mother feels the same way, is let's just let her, you know, lead this on. Let's see what she wants to do. Will she drop it? Is it just drama? But anyway, I just like to, you know, a little guidance on whether we're handling it right would be really cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Don. Stay on the line here. Alan, help me with the phrase gender fluid. I want to, again, want to keep everybody on the same page here.
Gender fluid is usually a phrase to say you switch. Sometimes you like being referred to as masculine or feminine or neither or both.
There's some flexibility here, it sounds like. How about Don's point, Alan, this notion that, you know, is this, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, a phase his daughter's going through, or how you might approach his situation?
I would say just be as supportive as possible. I don't think it's a phase, but it could be her evolving in her identity or her expression. And usually expression is very fluid. And even if they express as very feminine, that does not affect their identity. That's just their preferences to how they express themselves with their outer looks.
Okay, Wes, chime in here.
I totally support the direction he went there with the child, because if you get into a big fight about it, then it becomes more, as my teen girls like to say, drama-licious than it will be if you just let it evolve and see where it goes. One of the things that I have learned is that it's good to look at transitioning for teens from what I call a conflict model. And Don's point is exactly down that line. And the first conflict is the child with themselves. Mm-hmm. You asked a good question of Alan earlier. And in my discussions with Alan, I kind of found that Alan had a little bit easier self-conflict process than what a lot of kids express, that it came a little easier to him. The second conflict is the coming out process. And Don's daughter went through that conflict the other day with family, with the community, with school, et cetera. And that conflict goes either the way Don described, where you let it evolve and let them be thinking about it and let them express it, and then it's either going to develop further or it's going to move on. But I would never use the term it's just a stage you're going through, because that is the fastest way to get an emotional reaction you're ever going to get. And then the third
kind of figured that was like saying, no, you can't date that boy anymore.
Exactly. Hi, I didn't realize you're still on there. I would have spoken to you. Yeah, exactly. And exactly. If you tell somebody, don't date that boy, you're going to have grandkids with him at some point. So likewise. But I also would not undershoot the mark, like the couple you described, the two girls as a couple. You know, that's probably every bit as meaningful a relationship to them at 12 or 13 or 14 as a straight relationship would have been. And then the third conflict is the transitioning conflict. And you also brought this up, Don. This is the conflict about presentation, and it can range from the clothing, the binding you mentioned, breast binding. We haven't had too much time to talk about, but that is the, one of the earliest presentation practices mm-hmm. where girls will purchase a binder. And there are some rules about wearing a binder you have to learn because you can only wear it a certain amount of time per day or it can cause some physical issues. Those are all things you want to learn.
Ellen, hop in here.
With binding, the main rules are don't wear for more than 8 hours. Don't wear while you're sleeping. Often stretch and exert, and don't do too much exercise in it. Just do like stretches and relax your muscles and breathe deeply.
Mm-hmm. You would know all that, wouldn't you? You are so smart about this stuff. And then the fourth one, interestingly enough, is the conflict between the client and the therapist. And why would that be a conflict? Because if a teen or young adult wants to do physical transition, the therapist is going to have to write a letter on that. And that means you go from a level of just being supportive to having to be an evaluator and talk about physical change. So there's your four conflicts of transitioning.
Don, I hope that helped. I got to move on here a little bit, but I hope that helped.
It did. Thank you.
You're going to do
all the
good,
best
Don.
To you. Yeah. Bye-bye. Jennifer from Prairie Village. Jennifer, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about gender identity. Good morning.
Hi. Some of this is new to me. I had never heard of asexuality, and it made me think of Michael Jackson, and I wondered if he's could be an example of that. He just seemed to not really be attracted to anyone, you know.
I would never try to plumb the depths of that psychology.
Yeah.
But definitely that is the idea of not having the sexual desire. And, of course, in my business, you have to separate that from an arousal problem where a person doesn't have what we would term a normal level of sexual arousal. Now, you know, who wants to ask me what normal is?
Yeah.
That's where it starts getting complicated.
And Jennifer, a lot of this is new to me too, and that's one of the reasons I like having Dr. Wes on the show, because these are things that are happening in our world, and I think we need to have some sense of what's going on out there.
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate it. Let's go to Jan from Kansas City North. Jan, thanks for holding on.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a really brief comment that when people were talking about a non-binary assignment, you know, for themselves.
Yes.
Wondered whether that could be the same thing as what we used to refer to as androgyny or being androgynous.
This, again, non-binary, referring to the idea that someone doesn't identify specifically as male mm-hmm. or female. Alan West,
yeah.
what do you think?
Well, you're too old. You're too young, Alan, to remember. You don't use that term anymore, do you?
Not usually.
Yeah. This was sort of a post. I'm going to do my best from memory. This is sort of a post-feminist era, where the idea was really, in many ways, that masculinity was a bit toxic, and that if one was more gender neutral in their empathy and in their emotional approach to the world, they would be better off. The current thinking is just different, because I would almost argue androgyny was a response to the failings of gender involvement with the binary sexes. And today it's sort of a removal of the importance of gender. I know they seem similar. I think it's a little different movement, but you're right to think about that history.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. All right, thank you.
Jan, thank you. I appreciate it. Casey called to ask, do non-binary gender persons feel sexual attraction to one or both sexes or none?
In my opinion, it could be either. Non-binary is not identifying with a certain gender, really, and sexual attraction is very different from gender identity. It is a completely different thing. If you're male, if you identify male and your sex is female, you don't necessarily have to like male or female, because it's what you feel, and it's different for everyone, no matter how you identify.
Yeah,
I'm getting a sense here today, Wes, that the range of possibilities is almost endless. You can twist the dominoes any number of ways and come up with a combination that might apply.
Sure. If you begin from the angle, I have had to think more about this in the last few years. I'm just an old married straight guy, and I've had to think, how do I understand this? And the way I understand it is I have an attraction profile, and it's been kind of surprised how narrow it is. I have realized I'm attracted to women who look like my wife, which I think she probably is happy about. And if I see – I didn't even think about this. If I see a woman who I think, oh, she's very beautiful, oh my gosh, she looks like my wife. Okay, so that's my attraction profile. And some people have broader attraction profiles. They will notice women of all different sizes or ethnicities or hair colors. I just don't really notice those as much. Okay, so broaden it further, and some people notice all those women and men. And some women notice all those men and women. And some people don't notice the opposite sex partners at all. Mm-hmm. They notice same-sex partners. This is the nature of attraction. And just like the banana example, there's been a long history of we don't have a choice in this. I think some of the worst lines ever put into characters' mouths on shows were, if I could be anything but gay, I would be. And I have, this was not a good line back in the day. You're not being forced. But at the same time, I don't control who I'm attracted to.
Right.
I don't change that. I can extend it cognitively if I want to, but the automatic response I get is in my attraction profile. That's regardless of how I identify as what we refer to as a cisgendered male. That's a person who is male at birth and identifies male, by the way.
We're talking about gender identity this morning, changing perceptions, changing realities out there. Let's go to Florence from Kansas City, Kansas. Florence, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Welcome back.
Well, thanks, Florence. I appreciate that.
Welcome to your guest. My question is, what does scientific research reveal about gender identity in Homo sapiens?
What does the science say, Wes?
Well, this is, as you know, science, it's a different paper that follows a different paper, and they argue back and forth. Generally, the science says that historically people have had a gender assignment in their brain and a gender assignment in their genitals, and that typically those two things go together. And there are some complex reasons in the process of fetal development why that might be true. Mm-hmm. I learned all these at the University of Michigan, but I can't cite them. They have language that goes beyond what I understand. But the general understanding is those two things are true. Whether that is relevant to kids today and their sense of a broader way of expression is unclear to me yet. Mm-hmm. There's a clear tradition of the science, and now there is a culture that may be evolving beyond that.
Okay. Wes, you have a conflict-based model for working with and thinking about transition here. What led you in that direction of considering this as a series of conflicts?
Yeah, it's like I was saying to the dad earlier, Don.
You brought it up a little bit.
Yeah, I began to realize that at one time this conflict model kind of applied to coming out as gay or lesbian or bisexual. And today that's less of a conflict for younger people. It's almost like I'm exaggerating a little bit. It's almost like you just have this conversation with your family and you're like, hey, I'm dating Susan if you're a girl, or Max if you're a guy, or whatever. And it's not this big production anymore. So the conflict is less than it used to be. For the transgender folks, there really is, I think, and will continue to be for a while, these four levels of conflict. And I've come to that from just having these conversations, a lot of them, and recognizing this pattern. And I said this to one of my trans teens the other day. I said, I think I'm going to use this conflict model. And they said, yes, describes it down to the letter. At each stage, you're going to run into a conflict with yourself or others, and that conflict has to resolve for you to move forward in it.
Does that make sense to you, Alan, as you hear Wes talk about this conflict-based model?
Yes, it makes a lot of sense to me, because honestly, you find conflicts at every stage of finding yourself living everything.
Yeah, yeah. And the stages of conflict as you see them, Wes, would be what?
That self-identity formation, the coming out to community, the physical transition, that's the binding, the surgery. And then that ultimate one is the one with the therapist, that anybody who's going to transition, get anyone who wants to do hormones, which these are all things that are kind of the top stage, breast reduction is something high on the list for the assigned at birth female wanting to become either more gender neutral or more male, having breasts removed. And these are surgeries, and there are clinics all over the country that do this. They're very legitimate, and they have a list of criteria you have to meet. One of those criteria is either to have two mental health professionals or one. It depends. Write a letter that says two things. One, that you are mentally healthy enough to make this decision. And two, that you have gone through a sufficient dialogical process that you are prepared to undergo this, and that you are correctly identifying yourself.
You have to be a certain age to sign off on that?
There's a good question. That's part of the conflict, because if you're under 18,
right,
the conflict about presentation and someone wanting surgery, which occurs in my life on occasion, becomes one of not only who's going to sign, but who's going to pay for it.
Okay, just quickly before we leave this and end our show here, for parents out there who are listening to this, who have kids maybe who they can identify as facing some of these kinds of issues, and this is a new world for them,
mm-hmm,
where can they go get information? Where can they go get help?
Yeah. So that is a great question. The whole reason, you'll recall, I went to Michigan to do this was to try to learn really a lot more about it. And that, I think I would suggest, and I have several people in Kansas City that I refer to, you want to have somebody who is both good with kids and also has some really good understanding of gay and lesbian and transgender issues, and is very not just open to it, but pretty knowledgeable about it. Now, sure, there's a huge learning curve. If we haven't proved that today, I don't know what else we've proved.
Right.
But there are people who have been having this conversation, and those are the ones you want to ask and get in touch with.
Dr. Wes Crenshaw, it's always great to have you here. Thanks
good
for enlightening
here.
Us
welcome
on a very
back.
Difficult topic. I appreciate it. Ellen, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
awesome.
Your insights very, very much. Did a
Thank
great
you.
Job. Okay, you can listen to previous programs and download our podcast. Just go to kcur.org/up-to-date. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up-to-Date. Tomorrow in the program, we learn how to craft a meaningful apology. Imagine that. One that avoids making a bad situation even worse. Our program is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Coy Duggar, and Claire Tatacoro. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.